people.
Neuju.
Globalization, to a large extent, is actually removing responsibility from people within their own locality to take care of themselves.
We know that people do not know who rules or why and how he rules. And yet, they know that there is a power that certainly rules.
And we travel 1,000 miles in an hour and a half. We have traveled through whole areas of existence which we have not necessarily gained. We will pop into a Hindu village, but we won't know a damn thing about that Hindu village.
If you push that all the way, you see, what it means is that we will increasingly tend to inhabit all of these areas in depth simultaneously.
Južna hemisfera. Vsako drugo sredo poročamo o južni polobli. Točno o poldan.
Pozdravljeni. V današnji južni hemisferi bomo govorili o miskitih, avtohtonem srednjeameriškem ljudstvu. Poseljeni so na vzhodni obali Nikaragve in Hondurasa, njihova populacija danes šteje okoli 300 tisoč ljudi. Njihov izvor najdemo v mešanju staroselskega indijanskega ljudstva Sumu z belci in črnci. Današnja sogovornica, ameriška antropologinja Laura Hobson Herlihy, je vrsto let preživela z miskiti in o njih napisala tudi nekaj knjig. Na začetku nam predstavi njihov izvor in zgodovino.
Miskitu, the indigenous Miskitu people, they're a post-contact group, so they really didn't exist before the arrival of the Europeans and the Africans, and their essence is probably indigenous Sumu people who were living at the Cape Gracias a Dios, which is now the whole Rio Coco, which leads up to Cape Gracias a Dios, is the international border between Honduras and Nicaragua. So there were probably indigenous Sumu people living at the Cape when the Europeans arrived. And Columbus's fourth voyage, I think that's when they gave the name Cape Gracias a Dios, because they were so happy to see land. They were in a, which means thanks to God, gracias a Dios in Spanish, because they were so happy to see land, because apparently they were in some rough seas. So after that, more Europeans arrived, and a lot of British pirates were in the area also, and the Miskitu also helped the British fight the Spanish to the west. And so they made, they were good friends, and they were allies with the British, both with the military and with later the pirates. So the Miskitu used to keep the pirates alive. They used to go off on their ships and hunt turtle and fish and work on the pirate ships. They were also given guns by the British, like I said, to fight the Spanish, but with those guns, and they were muskets. People don't know where the term Miskitu came from. Some people think it might be from the muskets they carried, but they were able to dominate the other indigenous groups in the region. So they were a very successful group, and they spread. Their population numbers grew, and their territory grew, and they intermarried with the escaped slaves. A lot of the escaped slaves who came to the coast, freemen, blacks who were already freed. A lot of blacks were coming over from Jamaica and the Grand Cayman, and so their population is grew quickly, mm-hmm. whereas other groups after contact were decimated. The Miskitu really thrived after contact.
The interesting is this intermarriage and also the cohesion with other cultures. It seems that the Miskitu accepted other people in different way than we are used to. By this I mean that they were really interested in other cultures, it seems, and they wanted to learn from them, and by this they also opened a new platform for themselves, I imagine.
Yeah, and a lot of it is intermarriage, and the way they absorbed others was that the women passed down the language and culture to the children, and a lot of the men were the foreigners, especially when you're talking about the British and the blacks. So it was women marrying with outside men and then passing down Mosquito language to the children. But they didn't like all outsiders, and they have certain, I mean, they are really defined by their hatred for the Spanish, and so that's a recurring theme throughout their history, which also occurred during the Nicaraguan Revolution in the 80s, from 79 to 1990, and when they were the U.S.-backed Contra rebels. So they've had a historic alliance with English, Anglo peoples, English speakers, and they love the British and people from the U.S., and they hate the Spanish, and they hate the mestizo Spanish speakers from the Pacific side of their country.
Yes, during the conflict of between Augusto Sandino of Nicaragua and the United States in the 30s of the 20th century, this was also an important time for the Mosquitos, I believe. It seems that some of them decided to cooperate with the Sandistas, and the others wanted something different, some sort of independence from the Nicaraguans.
Yeah, there's been sort of recurring history. The same theme happens again and again, and at that point in the 1930s the Mosquito were happy with all of the companies, the fruit and lumber companies from the United States that were out on the coast, and they wanted to be their own independent nation, but then Cabezas took over, and you know, that was earlier in the 1900s, Cabezas reincorporated the area, and then again there was a conflict with Sandino, and that's when the Somozas came into power. The British, the Mosquito were always supportive of Somoza. He spoke English. He allowed the U.S. companies there, so they did not like Sandino, and they were pro-Somoza.
Miskiti so bili v 17. in 18. stoletju močno oboroženo ljudstvo. Velika Britanija jih je namreč zalagala z mušketami, da bi jim pomagali v lokalnih kolonialnih vojnah proti Špancem. S pomočjo mušket pa so ohranjali varnost svojega ljudstva in predvsem svojega ozemlja, čeravno so bili vedno pod jarmom nekoga drugega. Jaram je leta 1894 prevzela Nikaragua. Kot smo že slišali strani Laure Hobson Hurlihy, so bili Miskiti med drugim del upora sandinistov proti Združenim državam Amerike. Večji del Miskitov se pod oblastjo Nikarague ni najbolje počutil. Oblast sandinistov in kasneje tista Anastasia Somoza de Baile ter v 80-ih prejšnjega stoletja znova sandinistov ni bila prizanesljiva do drugačnih pogledov na življenje, kot jih v resnici nudi filozofija Miskitov. 20. stoletje so preživeli v konstantnem konfliktu z ljudstvi, ki so naseljena poleg njihovega avtohtonega območja na vzhodni meji Hondurasa in Nikarague. Vrhunec je konflikt doživel v 80-ih letih prejšnjega stoletja. Nadaljuje Laura Hobson Hurlihy.
The conflict of the 80s is a complicated, I guess, process. At first, it was the Mosquito were with the Sandinistas and fighting a Marxist class-based revolution. They were poor, the Sandinistas were poor, and they were, had enough of the Somoza regime, which lasted between the brothers, right, from like 1930 to 79, till they ousted them. There were three Somozas in power, and finally people just got tired. I think the Somozas owned three-fourths of the country, you know, the airport, the press, everything. They, the earthquake in 1972, which leveled 200 city blocks, was Nicaragua's never been rebuilt because Somoza took all the money in foreign assistance and basically stole it. So the earthquake had a lot to do with people running out of patience also for Somoza. But the Mosquito were with the mestizos, the Sandinistas at first, and then decided not to be, and decided that the new mestizo nation, the revolutionary nation that the Sandinistas were planning, didn't include or didn't have space for indigenous identity. And so that's when the class-based revolution for them wasn't important, and they started really influencing their ethnic identity more than their class identity. And they wanted especially their own land rights and their language rights. There was a huge campaign for literacy with the Sandinistas, and one of the first problems was that the brigadistas of Mosquito language teachers, Mosquito teachers in general, wanted the literacy program to be conducted in the indigenous language. So it was a lot about land and language, why the Mosquito separated from the Sandinistas.
V letu 2009 so Miskiti v želji po lastni neodvisnosti oblikovali deželo z imenom Narodna skupnost Miskitov. Več o njej pa naša sogovornica.
I think the 2009 proclamation was not official. That was a movement that a man who called himself Witatara, like the big judge, and the council of elders. It was just a faction that started that autonomy and proclamation because, you know, the politics of the region. In 2006, there was an alliance between the Sandinistas and the Yatama party, the main Mosquito party, and the Yatama party, or indigenous organization, you could call them, made an alliance in 2006 with the Sandinistas. So, and they're still... have that alliance, and the leaders of Yatama are still unwavered with their alliance with the Sandinistas. So that Witatara proclamation that came out in 2009 was not serious. It was not real in a sense. It was sure based on people's feelings, but it was really about people who were not in power, who had not made the alliance with the Sandinistas. I think we're doing something a little bit not realistic.
Yatama je politična stranka, ki v prevodu nosi ime Sinovi Matere Zemlje. Ustanovljena je bila leta 1989, njen namen pa naj bi bil skrbeti za interese majhnih avtohtonih ljudstev v območju Nikaragve in Hondurasa. Več o stranki Laura Hobson-Hurlihy.
The Yatama Party, they were the former Conchas, and there were a lot of different developments before a party called Kisan became Yatama. But before that, they were Misrasara, and there were factions always among the Mosquito. And the two big leaders during the war, during the revolution and the Concha War, the two big leaders were Stedman Faggett and Brooklyn Rivera. And Stedman was in Honduras during the war with Misura, and Rivera was in Costa Rica during the war. And his party was Misurasata, and then Kisan, and then it became Yatama. But they were the two big leaders, and they still are the ones who made the alliance with the Sandinistas that started in 2006. And today, Faggett is the head of the fisheries industry, which is huge because lobstering is the big industry on the coast. And Rivera is now, Brooklyn Rivera is now a diputado, I guess you would call him a congressman. And but also the head of Yatama, Brooklyn Rivera has all the power now, and people don't follow Edmund Faggett at all. So Brooklyn has been the leader, Maximo, the maximal leader of the Mosquito people, you know, for over 30 years, 35 years. And I think he represents the people. And I don't think that Yatama is not concerned with the people. I think just the opposite. They have consolidated the people. And now they have the majority, they win the majority of elections on the coast, which is a new thing. And they've solidified Miskito identity through Yatama and are now dominating elections over the Sandinista Party.
What are elections like there?
Well, a lot of the, you know, it's party related. It has to be party related, and that's one of the problems, is that on in within the regional autonomous regions, I should say, and there each has a regional government, you know, the north region and the south region. There is a, they also represent, you know, the Creole and the Sumu and the other indigenous groups. So they represent all of the ethnic and indigenous groups on the, but their party, you know, the regional governments, you, they have a certain amount of, a number of, from each party and each ethnic group that have to be represented.
V mesecu septembru je po 40 letih prizadevanj Miskitov Ustavna republika Honduras s predsednikom Profirom Lobo Soso na čelu podelila avtohtonemu ljudstvu 7% državnega ozemlja, kar je na primer približno slaba tretjina ozemlja Republike Slovenije. Miskiti v Hondurasu imajo torej prvič v zgodovini svoje uradno ozemlje, čeravno je le to njihovo že od prihoda belega človeka na območje. Miskiti so v svoji dobrodušni naravi veseli ob tej novici, a kritiki vendarle izpostavljajo številne politične pasti, ki naj bi bile na vidiku onkraj navidezno poštene ponudbe. Potrebno je izpostaviti dva vidika. Prvič, zagovorniki poteze pravijo, da bo lastništvo avtohtonega ljudstva nad ozemljem preprečilo nadaljno deforestacijo in pridobivanje palmovega olja. Številni okoljevarstveniki namreč menijo, da so miskiti najboljši varuhi borovega in tropskega gozda na območju. In drugič, kritiki poudarjajo, da so voluharji že za vogalom. Angleško podjetje British Gas Group naj bi namreč po poti lokalnega soglasja na istem ozemlju že v začetku prihodnjega leta začelo tam pridobivati zemeljski plin. Britanci se vračajo v Honduras ali večno vračanje enakega. Vseeno pa je gesta vlade za ljudstvo miskitov pomembna.
Post in Nicaragua, where the Miskito and the other ethnic groups on the coast, they have had autonomy basically since 87 and then the constitutionally since 90. But in Honduras is different from Nicaragua. They have never had political autonomy. They didn't fight the war. They didn't get political autonomy. So their situation in Honduras is different, and it's a smaller group of Miskito, and it's a smaller part of their lands, their territory, and they were just awarded, I know, five regions. Yep. They've gotten five concessions, and it's the MASTA political organization, and that it's a big deal, you know, because they haven't had autonomy like in Nicaragua, not that this is political autonomy, but yet it gives them their rights to their lands. And right now there's a lot of problems on the coast with narco trafficking especially, and cattle ranches and losing a lot of their forest lands. So it's a, you know, Honduras has a lot of problems right now for the Miskito.
Več o tem daj kasneje, danes pa se bomo še malce poglobili v navade in v odnos med spoloma med miskiti. 90% pripadnikov moškega spola se ukvarja s podvodnim lovljenjem jastogom. Ženske pa z vzgojo in magijo. Nadaljuje Lara Hobson-Hurlihy.
Well, the lobster industry is the latest of a series of boom and bust industries over the last 200 years on the coast, and it's lasted a long time since the 1970s. And U.S. companies are mainly the ones buying the lobster, Cisco Foods, who sell to a lot of it to a restaurant called the Red Lobster. And it's a cruel industry because so many men are injured and they get decompression sickness in the bends and there's little training and the equipment's old, and they go off on boats, very crowded, not very luxurious boats, and they live for 2 weeks at a time out on the seas. And so they leave their families during this time for migrant wage labor. And the women, the villages are basically just women and children along the coast. All the men are gone, lobster diving, and that lasts 9 months a year, and there's a moratorium, and they have they close the industry for 3 months a year during, well, the lobsters mate, and the men come back every 12 days with a lot of money, usually, and $300, $400 in 12 days, which is a lot for that region. And there are no banks, and they blow the money drinking rum and beer and spending it on women, and then they give some to their household, and then the women end up going to the stores to buy things with that cash. So they're not really living off of the rice and the beans that they grow upriver, ironically. They'll sell all that in bulk, and then they end up going to the store three times a day to buy what they need to cook.
They make some serious money with this business.
They make, you know, considering it's a poor country, they make more than they would as farmers. But the problem is that they spend a lot of it celebrating when they get back to shore. And then they also give a lot to women of the Matra group, their mothers, their sisters, their wife, their girlfriends. And so everyone's relying on this money, and it comes at a price because it's such a dangerous job that they have. And the lobster divers also, there's a lot of like religious beliefs and supernatural beliefs about it, about diving, and the men who get the bends and or who get killed or, you know, who or don't have use of their legs for the rest of their lives, they say it's the mermaid who's the main mosquito goddess who's punishing them for taking too many lobsters. So
this
they
is
don't...
This is the mermaid sickness, or...
Right, the mermaid sickness is what they call it. And so all the divers are scared of the mermaid. And when they see, you see the mermaid, that means you're either going to get the bends and be paralyzed or die. And the problem is they, on the boat, they dive too many dives, more than they're supposed to legally. And they do drugs when they're on the boat. And so they're not in very good physical condition a lot of times when they're underwater. And they think they see the mermaid underwater. And then they shoot up, you know, to the surface of the water too fast. And that's where a lot of the decompression sickness comes from. You're not supposed, you know, they don't have a lot of training or equipment, but they know they're not supposed to come up faster than their air bubbles. But if they see, like, seaweed waving and they think it's the mermaid's hair or it's the mermaid, they see something that reminds them, they'll shoot up to the water surface too fast. And that's just one example of how they get decompression sickness. Certainly they take too many dives than they should. And they go down deeper than they should because the lobsters are being depleted and they have to go down deeper and deeper to get the resource. At first, they just, in the 70s, they didn't even need equipment. They would just free dive. But as they exploited more and more of the lobster, they have to go deeper and deeper, which is more dangerous.
If we go a little bit back, you were mentioning their they like to celebrate after they have their catch and their hunt was finished. It seems like that they like to have fun, and, this is of course perfectly fine, but it seems that the women from the society don't accept this as well as men do. I believe they use the love magic in order to put control on the men.
Yeah, the women, they've always had a lot of magic, and they use magic to solve everyday problems as well as to heal sickness. So it's a big topic, and they use magic for all kinds of things. But one of the recent reinventions, I guess you could say, of love magic, because it's originally used to attract someone you desire, is to try and procure, the women use the potions to procure money from the divers. So it's not that they want the divers to be romantically interested in them in the purest way. They have it's a strategy for economic survival. So they use potions to manipulate the emotions of the divers so that the divers give them money. So they there are different kinds of potions. Some are broad spectrum potions so that all the divers buy them things. Some are specific to one person so that one person gives you the lion's share of their earnings. Some of the potions are hate potions and can make the divers leave their wives so that then you can have his money. Some of the potions make the divers forget about their families. So it's like a memory erasing potion so that they don't send money back to their matcher group or their former wives. Some of the potions prevent infidelity so that if you're married to a diver, he doesn't have other girlfriends and have sex with other women who he would give money to. Some of the potions are beckoning potions. So if someone is working and gets paid, you want them to get home immediately before they spend their money partying. So they have various kinds of potions that they use to get the money from the divers.
Are these potions basically drugs or?
A lot of them are plant-based. Some of them are prayer-based.
The love magic is basically sex or?
It's like Obeah, maybe from the British Caribbean. Not that different, probably from some of the voodoo from Haiti. A lot of it is mixed, though. It's Caribbean religions like Obeah and voodoo mixed with indigenous religions, and different plants are used. They believe in it, you know, so they think that it's real for them. A lot of it is smell-based also, so certain things you bathe in, a lot of things they put in your food,
uh-huh.
Coffees and soups, that sort of thing.
It's basically a cunning way for women to keep the man in order, to keep the man from spending everything before giving something.
Absolutely. And so the men use a lot of counteractive remedies to try and prevent being manipulated by the women. But it's a battle of the sexes. You know, the men are using amulets and counteractive potions, which they would call a contra in Spanish, and the women are you know, actively trying to control the men with their potions. They also do things like put their menstrual blood in coffee to try and attract men. So there are things that are present in other Caribbean, Afro-Caribbean cultures also that are very similar. But this is particularly to get the money from the lobster divers, a new use and specific use of traditional potions.
Družbo, hišo v okviru miskitov po konci držijo pripadnice ženskega spola. Bodi si s pomočjo seksa ali pač drog, nekako že prizemljijo svojemu žakarju k zavedanju, da obstaja svet tukaj in zdaj, ter da svoj ulov tudi kdaj prenesejo domov in ne neposredno najbližjemu gostilničarju. Pomembna je tudi vzgoja najmlajših, kar posledično pomeni vzgojo in prihodnost družbe, nadaljuje Laura Hobson-Herlihy.
Absolutely. It's mother-centered households, and descent is traced, although they use the male surname, descent is usually traced to your grandmother, and a typical village would be a grandmother who they call the Kuka house, and her cookhouse, and then surrounding her in like a semicircle will be her daughter's homes and their kids, and then there's a well in the middle that they all share. So the village where I lived, Curi, by the Rio Platino, was made up of about 5 different matcha groups, and the Kukas, or the grandmothers, sort of had these domestic groups. And the men are either offshore or they're upriver, because when they're not lobster diving. They're doing subsistence agriculture and hunting upriver. So the men are gone. So the women, yeah, do most of the raising of the children and the maintaining of the culture.
It sounds similar as to, let's say, some naval forces in the 16th or 17th century in Europe, when all the men went to sail into the wide seas of the world, and they returned in year 2 or 3 years, you know. They brought with them the money they earned, but they kept the women at home in order to keep the society alive.
Yeah, probably it sounds a lot like that. One feature, though, is that a lot of the women have children with different men, and so there's not really necessarily one husband who's away. They may have children with, uh-huh, you know, 3 or 4 men over their lifetime, and they may not be married at all.
The men are off, the red lights go on, like in Holland.
Well, I think it's mostly about survival and economics. I don't think it's so much about the men being gone either. I think that that's just part of their society, that they, it's common to have serial, you know, a lot, I guess serial monogamy, a series of husbands over your lifetime, whether or not they're gone or not.
Tokrat na Južno hemisfero sva pripravila Luka Počivalšek in Mare. Lepo pozdravljeni in srečno.
Globalization to a large extent is actually removing responsibility from people within their own locality to take care of themselves.
We know that people do not know who rules or why and how he rules. And yet they know that there is a power that certainly rules.
And we travel 1,000 miles in an hour and a half. We have traveled through whole areas of existence which we have not necessarily gained. We will pop into a Hindu village, but we won't know a damn thing about that Hindu village.
If you push that all the way, you see what it means is that we will increasingly tend to inhabit all of these areas in depth simultaneously.
Južna hemisfera. Vsako drugo sredo poročamo o južni polobli. Točno opoldan. Zdravo!